Welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Varsha.
And I'm Devin. And welcome back to season three of Hellbent. I'm not going to stop saying that because it just tickles me pink. This is year three of Hellbent. My little weird dream has been coming true. So I just, some days I can't even handle how wonderful it is. But yeah, we have a packed show today. We're going to start with 2020, which we didn't talk about last week because I've been putting it off, because I know that this is going to dominate my life for the next 2 to 60 years of my life. So I was really trying not to talk about it, but I think the time has come. We're going to talk about it. We're also going to talk about the shutdown. We're in day 20. It's Thursday. And if the shutdown goes into tomorrow and the weekend, which there's nothing to suggest that it won't, this will be the longest ever shutdown in history. So congratulations, Trump. You are the best at something. And then we're also going to talk about marginal tax rates. So I won't spoil that one for you. It's real sexy. So, but Varsha, how's your week been? You're in DC.
It's been good. It's been really cold. I've been researching at the Library of Congress. I've also been just hanging out in DC. I love this place. I wish somebody would just hire me so I could stay here forever. It's the best.
Nerd.
I know. Yeah. I just really like it.
No, I mean, you're a nerd, but I'm teasing you about being a nerd. All right, so we got, like I said, packed show. So let's jump in.
Okay, Devin, so what does 2020 look like so far?
Okay, well, considering that it's 2019, everyone could go fuck themselves, but we're going to talk about it anyway. And I realize that presidential elections, we're not really starting too early. But no, you know what? I'm going to take that back, because we're not voting until November of 2020, which is in a little under 2 years, which is, it's so long, Varsha.
It's
such a long time to
have to
talk
be
about
this long. I wish there was laws where the primary could only be a one fucking month and everyone had to go on like 3 debates or like 5 debates in that 1 month, and then it's over. After that 1 month, nobody ever talks about people who lost ever again.
Hell, I would literally take the primaries have to start in the year in which you are voting, right? Like, start this January 1st, 2020, motherfuckers. Like, I'm tired already. But anyway, my dreams will not be coming true this year. So the Democratic Party, as predicted, is going to have 40, somewhere between 30 and 4,500 contenders, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I'm more making fun of the sort of political theater that's going to eat up the rest of my life. But, you know, a lot of people are coming out, prominent people we guess who are coming out, and then like randos that like the person in college that you Facebook friended because you met them once at a party, and now they still show up in your feed and you're like, who are you? But you don't bother deleting them because you're like, oh, I met her once at a party when I was 19. So obviously she has to stay on my Facebook feed. I've thought about this a lot, y'all. A lot.
The way I deal with that is like every time it says Facebook tells me it's someone's birthday, if I don't remember that person, I unfriend them on their birthday.
Brilliant. That's actually brilliant. That is so smart. That is really smart. I usually just search for who likes Nickelback.
That's also smart.
Which, like, I hate on Nickelback a lot, but that one song, though, I do like. Yeah. I'm very uncool. but anyway, so let's start by talking about something positive. Who's not running? That might just be faster. Let's just talk about who's not running. Tom Steyer, not running.
Yay!
So Tom Steyer is a billionaire, eccentric billionaire, and I love me a good eccentric billionaire. And he's been the one who's funded those Trump must be impeached ads that you see on MSNBC. And he's pumped like $40 million into the project, and he's planning to pump another $30 million into the project. And people were like, oh, Tom Steyer has a lot of money and is a businessman. He should run. And I was like, hey, everybody, there were a lot of things that we were supposed to learn from 2016 that we didn't. But that's a big one. Yeah. So I was supremely irritated when people were talking about a Tom Steyer run. But he did announce that he won't be running. So that's your good news for today.
Yay. I also hope Bloomberg doesn't run, just because, like, I get it. Like, everyone, you know, voted for a billionaire in 2016, but we don't need another billionaire to run. I think we're fine. I think we're good.
I really don't want Oprah to run either. Like, this is not, I mean, really, if a billionaire is going to run, not a white dude is preferable. But, like, let's just say blanket ban on billionaires who have no political experience. Yeah. Just a thought. I don't know. Just a thought. Anyway, Tom Steyer is not running, so we can all like hold on to our butts on that. But then we already have a couple of candidates who have come out saying that they are going to run, including Elizabeth Warren and just today.
Yeah, today.
Kamala Harris. So, which those are both exciting. But there's one more person who we think is going to run. So, Varsha, can you talk about that?
Yeah. So, there was a person who ran for Senate in Texas, and he did a really, really great job. He lost the race to Ted Cruz, but Beto did a really, really good job. But Beto, we really don't want you to run in 2020. Can you not run?
I'm supremely irritated.
Really irritated.
I'm supremely irritated.
I'm really sick. Again, I understand the need for a white man to like answer the calling that nobody called. I really get it. It's
answer the phone that's not ringing.
Answer the phone that's not ringing. Like, I understand it. It's like, you know, baked into your DNA or something, but nobody asked you to run. People who asked you to run,
right,
they're not your political like friends. They're not genius political consultants. They're not representative of every single voter. There is no way every single voter, primary voter, is like, yes, we want Beto to run in 2020. Also, what really bugs me in this is like, it's skipping the line. It's thinking that you are entitled to jump in front of the line in front of, you know, eminently more qualified white dudes and, more importantly, women that you can run. Like, I get it. He looks like a Kennedy type figure. He speaks really well. He, you know, speaks like a normal person, and he took on a really hated politician. I understand the need or the appeal. I'm saying it doesn't make sense to me right now, logically.
Look, I look like drugged up country club trash from like New England, but that doesn't mean that I am, you know? And again, like, I'm not throwing Beto on his butt cheeks for fun here. And the fact of the matter is Beto, love him, lost his Senate race. And in Texas, he only lost by like 2 points, which is basically winning. And someone said that to me, and I was like, well, you and I have different ideas of winning, but I see the point that you're trying to make, and I'm okay with it. That's fine. But I'm just going to cut right to the quick here. I read an article in Huffington Post this week. A piece in Huffington Post called "I Want a Woman President. I'm Not Afraid to Say So Anymore." So here's what I'm going to do.
I know
do,
the person who wrote that.
Hellions.
It's Friends. Amazing. It's,
you?
Yeah. Talia Levin is amazing. Yeah.
Hellions, Friends, Country Women, Compatriots. Yeah. Here's what I'm going to say and what I will continue to say for the next 2 to 1 million years of my life. I want a fucking woman to be president. I am done skirting around this issue and being like, oh, Beto's good. Like, yeah, Biden, I don't know, whatever. No. Fuck that. I don't want them. I don't want Bernie for a myriad of reasons, but, you know, the number one being he's not a Democrat. I don't want Biden for a whole litany of reasons. I don't want Beto. I don't want another dude to be president. I'm fucking over it. I'm done.
I want to end 200 plus years of male rule. I just want to do it. If that makes me a quote unquote what men's rights activists call sexist, so be it. I'm a fucking sexist.
Ooh.
Thank you, men's rights activists, for telling me what I am. I want a woman president. And I want it for so many reasons besides the fact that I have a vagina. But if you're going to distill it down to the fact that I have a vagina, yeah, I want a woman president because she will most likely have a vagina. But she won't be talking about
Look, all I'm doing is demanding representation. That's how this country was built, is people stood up and said, we are not being represented. And that's some bull ass shit. And all I'm doing is following in the storied tradition of America standing up and saying, this is some bullshit. I want to be represented properly and accurately. White men have been represented every which way to Sunday. And all I'm asking for is the same, right? I'm asking to be represented by my own fucking party. And, you know, this always starts whenever I get into this conversation with men, it's always men. They say, well, can a woman win against Trump? I'm like, that's the wrong fucking question. You are asking the wrong fucking question. The right question is, what does the Democratic Party look like? How do we represent them? And we need to start running candidates that look like that, which, by the way, it's women of color, people of color, and women in general. That's it.
That's it.
Period. That's the Democratic Party.
I'm saying it here first, folks. I will not rest until every single elected official in the Democratic Party is a woman. I get it. Men
Seriously.
Have their benefits. They do. You know, Barack Obama, great president. Love the guy. Right? Great.
Andrew Gillum, charming as hell.
Amazing. Beto, great guy. Super awesome. Great guy. Gavin Newsom, great governor so far. Jerry Brown, love the guy. Bill de Blasio, cool. I'm just saying, I am, as men rights activists say, a sexist. I want every single candidate to be a woman because women fucking vote in Democratic primaries. They vote in elections. They organize. They are the reason we have hundreds upon hundreds of indivisible groups across the country. They're the reason we have effective lobbying groups like Moms Demand. They are the backbone.
They're the reason Beto was Beto. They ran his campaign. There was a whole article about how almost all of his campaign volunteers and leadership were women. So don't give me this, will a woman win? Start thinking a little bigger here. And the thing is too, is and then they always say, oh, you know, men in my life always say, oh, you know, I can't wait for gender parity in politics. I'm like, gender parity? Fuck that. I don't want 50-50. I want women to be in charge. It has been male dominated for 200 plus years. And and that's a shit show. So you can see yourself the fuck out. I don't want gender parity. I want women to rule this motherfucker.
Matriarchy.
Because you know what? Yeah, maybe it won't work. Try it. Yeah, maybe it won't work. But you know what? It probably will. So go fuck yourself. And I get so frustrated. So I get it. I get why Beto O'Rourke wants to run. I understand why he wants to answer the phone that's not ringing. But we need to stop. We need to cut this off at the knees because I am done. I am so fucking done with all of these, you know, white men who are like, well, you know, the Democratic Party, you know, needs to be doing these things. And we need someone who can win against Trump. Bullshit. We need someone who will get people out to vote.
That's the answer to the age old question. So like everyone is saying we need someone who can like do better than Hillary Clinton did in terms of antagonizing Trump but still talking about policy. And I'm like, but that wasn't Hillary Clinton's problem in 2016. It wasn't that she didn't talk about policy or that she antagonized Trump too much. It was that she had, on her part and on the media's part, a really bad relationship with the media. And then on top of that, she had 30 years in politics that made her look bad. And so she had that experience that made her look bad, right? So what you should be looking for in a female candidate is someone who can do the things that Hillary Clinton did, but even better. And it's going to come down to, I hate this fucking word because it's a stupid word, but likability. But for me, what likability means, not that like I want to get a beer with you or that you have a penis. Likability literally just means, can you talk Democratic values so well that the media is going to cover you fairly? Because unfortunately, we can't count on the mainstream press media and cable news to do its job fairly, because what they're going to do is they're going to wait for 2 hours in front of an empty podium before Trump is going to give a speech. They're going to air Trump's racist nonsense without couching it in the fact that it is racist nonsense. They are not going to play fairly. Donald Trump is not going to play fairly. So we're going to really understand the lesson from 2016. And the lesson from 2016 wasn't women can't be president. The lesson from 2016 was we need to organize better and organize more effectively, and we need to choose a candidate in the best way possible. And the best way possible is, I know we were just railing against men for the past 10 minutes, but the best way possible is just to let the primary play out, let people vote, and after it's over, fall in line behind the candidate. I'm just saying, let's fall in line behind the woman.
Right, exactly. That would be number one preference. But like I said, if Bernie gets the candidacy nomination, which I shudder to think that might happen, but if he does, I will stand for that man. I will be a Bernie diehard. I will phone bank for him. I will volunteer for him. I will get him fucking elected, because you know what? Sometimes you have to choose between being right and winning.
Sometimes. And this doesn't mean that.
Sometimes. But the thing is we don't have to. You don't have to. And that's kind of my next point, which is, so the two women that we know so far that want to run are Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris, both of whom, big fans. They're both on my 2019 bucket list to interview, by the way. I made like a vision board because I started bullet journaling, which is, you know, like I said, drugged up country club trash. But so on there, I want to interview Hillary Clinton, Maxine Waters, Elizabeth Warren, and Kamala Harris, preferably all in 2019. But like,
eventually,
you know,
we'll get there.
I'll be patient.
I'm just saying, like, I'm so excited that Elizabeth Warren is running, because I was basically before December 31st, 2018, I could remember like three or four things I didn't like about Elizabeth Warren, not her personality, more like in the sense that like policy history and the way that she, you know, she conducts herself in the Senate. One was that, you know, she doesn't give a lot of interviews when she's walking out of the Senate. She's more like her own media manager. She really just goes straight to MSNBC. Mm-hmm. Another was a comment she made in 2017 about how President Obama shouldn't be making money off speeches after he's left the presidency, which I thought was dumb. And then another was the stupid DNA test, right? Those are like the three things.
Oh my God, she went cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs on that one. I was like, what? What are we doing here, Elizabeth Warren? Like, again, this goes back to all politicians have the same fatal flaw. The flaw is actually the same one that a lot of white men just have in their day-to-day lives. But it's they want to answer the phone that's not ringing. They want to be right all the time. And like I said, you can be right sometimes or you can win sometimes. And she really played that quite badly. And that's fine. And again, I'm fine with good faith criticisms of the people that we want to run for office and be president of the United States. I think it's important. And people can disagree on policy stances. People can disagree with a particular vote or an ideology. And that's all fine. What gets me is that I have a feeling, just a little hunch, that a lot of the criticisms of someone like Elizabeth Warren are not going to be based on good faith policy analysis. They're not going to be based on her, you know, sort of welfare state capitalism versus a more democratic socialism type of approach to the party. It's going to be about, oh, do we like her voice? Like, how does she look in that pantsuit? What do we think of her new haircut? Like, I can just feel it coming.
Yeah. Literally, there was an article. I forget the title of this article from Politico, but there literally was an article from Politico a couple weeks ago about how Elizabeth Warren has to, before she's even done any events, this was before she went to Iowa, before she'd done anything, has to deal with the problems that Hillary Clinton had. And she first has to run against Hillary. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Whoa.
And then there was also an article yesterday or a couple days ago in Jacobin where the headline or the tagline was, Elizabeth Warren is no moderate. But Bernie Sanders would be the most progressive president in U.S. history, and he'd have a movement to back him up. Wait, so what the article was literally arguing is that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie are both progressives, but Bernie is just a little bit more progressive. And I read the fucking article. It was some bullshit. And then I talked to some dudes about it, specifically dudes who are self-proclaimed socialists. And they were like, I see Elizabeth Warren as abandoning Medicare for all as soon as she becomes president. She'll abandon all these progressive policies. And I'm like, why would she do that? They're like, she just would. Her outlook is different. And I'm like, you understand the only difference between Bernie and Warren, in my opinion, is the fact that one is a woman and one is a man. Like, you can say.
And also, just to point out, Varsha, that one has passed comprehensive financial reform and has made their name creating consumer protections in the financial industry, and the other one named a post office.
And some defense bills for Vermont. So this is my issue, is that like as soon as a white man like enters the race, like everything goes out the fucking window and people are like, oh, it's not about experience, it's about electability. And I'm like, fuck you. Electability isn't some catch-all phrase that can disqualify or qualify a candidate. And so that I was so excited when Warren announced, because I thought, oh, finally, we're going to get a real contender in terms of like somebody who has the chops to, you know, talk to the really progressive leftist, you know, base in the Democratic Party, as well as the people who are out here who've been here a little bit longer, who are looking for more liberal policies as the labels go or whatever, right? I also thought, I'm really excited because she has actually passed progressive policy. She has literally created an agency out of thin fucking air. She literally calls out corruption every fucking day. Like just 2 days ago, she was dragging Joe Lieberman on Twitter because he's now like a lobbyist who isn't really on the level with the lobbying he's doing. She's a fucking badass. But somehow, out of thin fucking air, the sexist critiques just came in about how she literally, there was a quote about how like her voice is shrill and she seems really professorial. And I'm like, okay, well, Obama was professorial and he got along just fine. And then already,
Yeah, and also, what is this like anti-intellectualism bullshit? Like, oh, I'm sorry, being professorial and smart is a bad thing now? Like, what are we gonna do? Like a fucking bikini contest portion of the show now? Like, what are we doing?
Like, also, the way she was talking to voters in Iowa. So I'm following. So Dave Weigel does reporting for the Washington Post, and he has like. There are some issues with his tweets, but his reporting is really solid when it comes to Democrats who are running and Democrats in Congress. And so he followed Elizabeth Warren to Iowa, and I watched her speeches as well as his reporting, and the people were really listening because her speeches did not just include her policy objectives on corruption, on tamping down corruption and dealing with income inequality. She was also talking really seriously about racial injustice and racial inequality. And they were applause lines in Iowa, not in like a city or urban Iowa, in Iowa that's Republican. She went to the Republican districts first, and she had applause lines when talking about racial injustice and racial inequality. And so this is what I like about the female progressives that are going to be running in 2020, the female Democrats that ran in 2018, is that they know that it's a false choice to have to choose between income inequality or economic inequality and the racial and social injustices that are evident in the American society.
That's it.
They know it's a false choice.
That's the secret sauce. Is that they you know, one thing that even early on really irked me about Bernie is it was this economic injustice, which is such an important thing to talk about. And it is like at the heart, at the crux of so many of our biggest issues in this country. But you can't just throw everything else out the window because it doesn't fit that message. Because honestly, when you talk about income inequality and economic inequality, you can't not talk about race and gender and you know, LGBT status, and you can't leave it out, and he always did, and that's what we're seeing with someone like Warren, who is kind of giving the same economic injustice focus, but not leaving out the underlying factors that
So when it comes to Kamala Harris, who is my senator, and I fucking love her, she's awesome. She is half Indian American and half Jamaican American. She's a fucking badass. But there's also like good faith criticism of her as well. So like she used to be the California Attorney General. She used to be a prosecutor, and there are things in her past where like I think she did the wrong thing, and I fall down really hard on it. Also,
I agree.
Recently, one of her aides had a harassment lawsuit while he was working for her, and then he had to resign. And she offered an apology that I didn't really feel was a good enough apology. And so there are things that we're going to have to reckon with when she's in the debates and she's making her speeches. There are ways we're going to have to hold her accountable before I decide to give my vote to her or anyone decides to give their vote for her. But you can't rule her out. You can't disqualify her today, right? Carte blanche. Same thing with Elizabeth Warren and the DNA test. She has a chance. She has 1.5 years until the convention to decide, oh, I should probably apologize to Native American communities. I should probably give a speech where
right,
I explain where my family story came from and why I felt it was right for me to prove my family story true. But I fully understand the hurt that I caused by trying to prove that family story true. And I fully understand that I was putting my needs first above the needs of the Native American community and above the discourse that the Native American community has been engaged in when it talks about who belongs in their community. And so if she says that, then you can no longer say, oh, she's been lying about being a Native American for so long, because that's not what she was doing, right? The DNA test itself, literally, she wasn't claiming to be a part of Cherokee Nation now or claiming benefits or anything. She was trying to prove her family story correct in the face of Donald Trump calling her a racist slur every single time she's in the news. And he's still doing that. And so is Fox News, right? And so it's the same thing with Kamala Harris.
I'm a little worried about Warren. We're going to get back Harris in a second. Yeah. I'm a little bit worried that it's going to become her but her emails, because the media loves a catchy little turn of phrase.
Yeah.
So I'm worried about that. But for me, you know, that right, we can't just disqualify her outright for it. And what's also interesting with Harris, who I also really like, and I do have criticisms of, and especially when she was prosecutor AG in California. And when I voted for her for Senate, I remember researching and having some serious issues with what she did. But that's not to say that I can't vote for her, right? That's not to say that I can't, you know, the other thing about Warren, as I think it gives her like kind of an edge in this a little bit, is that before she got into politics, she was a teacher. She was a professor. And so her political career, her political track record, as it were, is relatively short. The longer you've been in politics, the more shit you have that people aren't going to like, which was one of Hillary's biggest assets and liabilities. She had this long ass career in politics. So and that spanned many years, many decades, many different movements. And so obviously you're going to be able to go back 25 years and find something you didn't like, or 5 years or 10 years. And the longer your record is, the more you're going to have to disagree with.
And I think that's why, like, I'm really frustrated with the like sexist criticism that's coming out already. Like already they're trying to disqualify both Harris and Warren carte blanche because of bullshit that they haven't let them speak their mind on. That there isn't like you, there's no possible way you can disqualify both of them carte blanche today. Right. And that's what's really proof that these men are like telling on themselves when they try to do that. And it really fucking bothers me. Also, I was talking about how this is similar to Harris, right? Like, yes, she has a history that you have to grapple with, but you have to let her tell her story, or because you would let that happen if a dude was running, right? If it came out tomorrow, which it actually came out today, that a former Bernie aide had settled a 30,000 sexual harassment lawsuit during the 2016 campaign, and Bernie apologized and said, oh, I didn't know about it. Like, you would let him tell his story, because literally that's what Bernie folk on Twitter were doing. They're like, oh, we can't blame Bernie for this. But you can blame Kamala Harris for an aide that she also says she didn't know about. You can blame Kamala Harris for doing her job as a prosecutor without letting her tell her story about how criminal justice has affected her life, and explain herself and explain how she would tackle criminal justice issues as president, and how she has as senator, because she is championing ending cash bail. She is championing criminal justice reform as a senator, right? So what really bothers me is that there are some male candidates who get a second chance, or who get a third chance, or a fourth chance. But women have to be exceptional from right off.
Well, women aren't allowed to have a past. And that's not just true in politics. That's true in everything, right? You always hear, you know, almost like colloquially, like anecdotally, you hear these things like, you know, why is a woman supposed to be a virgin on her wedding night? She's not supposed to have a past. She's not supposed to have any mistakes. She's not supposed to have anything. And if she does, or if she's changed her mind, that somehow disqualifies her, where these men are all allowed to have pasts, you know? And again, depending on how rich and white you are, that's the, you know, more past you get to have and be excused from. But women right off are just told like, oh, you said this once in 1994, so I can't vote for you. I'm sorry. And I'm like, that's not how any of this works. And look, we're not Republicans, and I'm not advocating this, but people, especially people who voted for Trump, or who are like, yeah, well, you know, Kamala Harris is, you know, didn't do the criminal reform that I wanted in California. I'm like, you need to go hold the phone and go fuck yourself.
Exactly. I'm not saying fall in line unapologetically behind every single primary candidate, regardless of who they are, because that's a boring primary.
No.
But I am saying, don't like tear down for no reason when it's this early. Don't try to like decide which camp you're in already. There's only two candidates that have announced, and maybe there's technically four because Bernie and Beto are definitely running, right? So it's a little annoying to already decide before any debates have happened, before enough speeches have happened, before they've come to your states, before you've had a chance to watch their campaign videos and their ads, to decide, oh, this is exactly what I'm going to do. And also, don't decide just on likability or electability or whatever you think, because everybody likes to be an armchair pundit, whatever you think is going to be able to beat Trump, or whoever you think is going to be able to beat Trump, focus on the experience. And at times, when it comes to Harris and Warren, the experience is troubling, right? Because Warren used to be a conservative, because Warren has Warren, again, had this DNA test thing, right? Because Kamala Harris has a history as a prosecutor. So use that experience and make your decision, like, you know, have a fucking pro and cons list. But don't, like, count out for no fucking reason. And also don't say that because somebody has had an experience as a prosecutor or because somebody has had an experience as a professor, they're automatically disqualified and they can't speak for you and they're going to abandon policy. Like, this is like the most frustrating thing that I heard, is that like somebody was telling me that, oh, like Warren will abandon Medicare for all and the Green New Deal and all the progressive policies she's championing, and she'll favor compromise. And I'm like, do you think Bernie has a magic wand, or do you think Beto has a magic wand that when they become president, they'll automatically be able to pass it and Republicans will just have to shut up? No.
Yes, it's called a penis. It's the name of their penis. Magic wand.
So that's basically my issue. I'm just like, I fully understand the good faith criticism of both Warren Harris, the good faith criticism of Beto and Bernie and every other person who's probably going to run. I'm just saying, can we take a fucking breath for 2 fucking seconds, but also elect a woman?
Right. Well, like I said at the top of the show, we have 4, really 2 firm and 4, like 2 more soft candidates, and there are going to be at least 6,000. Like, this is going to be like Thunderdome style for the next 2 years. So, you know, we've got some time to fight about this, but I think what I really wanted this segment to be is, you know, I'm coming out and saying right now, I want a woman. I will be much more likely to vote in the primaries for a woman, and I would like to see a woman candidate, and I would like to see a woman president, and I don't care if
I'm no longer apologizing for it. And the best thing about 2020 is that there's going to be at least 5 or 6 women who are probably running, and it's fucking awesome. So you'll have your choice of a lot of different type of women in terms of policy, right? If you're going to make an argument that, oh, I want a Bernie type anti-establishment candidate, fine, go for it. Vote for Elizabeth Warren. If you want a badass senator from California, you can vote for Kamala Harris. If you want Kirsten Gillibrand, you can vote for Kirsten Gillibrand. Right. If you want Amy Klobuchar,
dude, also, I would love to see Amy Klobuchar. I was just going to say, I would love to see Amy Klobuchar throw her name into the ring.
Amy Klobuchar would be fucking awesome because she is from the Midwest. She has a past as a politician, but like a super squeaky clean past. She talks like a normal American. Like, she doesn't, you know, she doesn't value test or, you know, what is it? Focus group test every single thing she says. She's awesome. She's great. And also, she's a badass senator. She's a better senator than Al Franken. So, from the same state.
I really just think of the Kavanaugh hearings when she stapled that motherfucker's ass to his seat and told him to sit down and shut up. And I will never forget that.
Yeah. And I think the most important thing, and we haven't talked about Biden during this whole time, but if Biden does run,
thank God,
I cannot vote for him. And this is the only candidate I will categorically deny being able to vote for. Like, I could see myself voting for Bernie in the primary. If it came down to it, it could happen, right? But I will not vote for Biden because I will not vote for a candidate who cannot defend against Donald Trump hiring an alleged attempted rapist to the Supreme Court, appointing an alleged rapist to the Supreme Court. Biden can't defend against that. Right? Because what Trump is going to say is going to be like, hey, you were there during the Clarence Thomas hearings, right? And Biden will be like, yeah, I fucked that shit up, but it helped you appoint another alleged rapist to the bench. Congrats. I can't vote for that guy.
Biden is actually the only candidate that I would have true pause voting for.
Yeah.
I would have true pause. Okay, Varsha, we are on day 20 of the government shutdown, which, if it goes past today and into this weekend, which it's likely to, it will be the longest shutdown in history. So, like I said at the top of the show, congratulations, President Trump. You're the best at something. Fucking everything up. Anyway, so can you tell us what's going on?
So basically, according to Democrats who have been in meetings with Donald Trump, it's a literal temper tantrum because Donald Trump met with Democratic congressional leaders on Wednesday, which was yesterday. And as soon as he asked them, are you going to pay for the wall? And Nancy Pelosi was like, fuck no. He slammed the table and walked out. And for some reason, because I don't understand why Democrats would leak this, but the White House insisted on leaking to the press that he offered them Butterfingers and other candy bars. And I'm like, why does that matter? Do you think Nancy Pelosi is going to cave because you gave her chocolate? Yes, she loves chocolate, but she's not going to cave because you gave her chocolate.
You know what would have really worked for me better if I were at Nancy Pelosi's position? If he had made postcard sized posters of that Game of Thrones thing that he had at the cabinet meeting, and he handed those out with like his signature on it. I would be into that, because then I could take it home and like burn it in effigy. But yeah, I mean, like, no, candy is not a thing.
It's not a thing. So basically, the shutdown is continuing to go on, if people don't know this already, because Donald Trump still wants $5 billion for a stupid fucking border wall. A border wall that he insisted during the whole campaign and for the better part of his presidency that Mexico would pay for. A border wall that he is now insist.
Wait, Varsha, I have questions. One, is Mexico going to pay for the wall?
Nope.
Okay, wait, I have another one. Smart Varsha. So now Trump is saying that what he meant was that his trade deal that he's negotiating that Congress has not passed is going to indirectly pay for the wall. Is that going to happen?
That's also bullshit. There are multiple examples, multiple articles online that you can read about how that's bullshit. USMCA, USMCA is not going to pay for the fucking trade wall. It's not. There's no way it's going to do that. Also, so he still wants $5 billion for this trade wall. Democrats do not want to give it to him. And they're in the right here, because nobody wants this fucking trade wall. Very few people want this trade wall. And what people really have to remember, and few people are talking about, is Republicans had control of the House and the Senate for 2 fucking years. They could have passed it any fucking time, because Mitch McConnell had another chance at budget reconciliation, or he could have also just nuked the Senate filibuster and passed the border wall anytime he wanted. Republicans don't want the fucking border wall. Also, if you go to border states and districts along the border, nobody in the border districts want it. Nobody. They actually don't want it more than people in other regions of the United States. They hate the idea of a border wall, because a border wall would require a shit ton of eminent domain. You know who hates eminent domain? Everyone. Because it's literally
everyone.
Government taking away your fucking land to build a border wall. It's stupid. And who really hates eminent domain is hardcore Republicans. So no one wants this border wall. And what Donald Trump is now claiming, and what he gave a really racist speech to, but he didn't declare, is that he could declare a national emergency to force them to build the border wall. But a national emergency is probably fucking unconstitutional. But there's like an article that explains how that's actually what they want, congressional Republicans and his advisors, because then it would get stuck in the courts. And so since it's stuck in the courts, like the government would have to reopen while it's being stuck in the courts, and they would just deal with it in the courts. But that's a big fucking gamble, because what Republicans and I think his aides are thinking is that if he declares an emergency and it gets stuck in the courts, that it'll just lose in the courts and they don't have to pass the border wall anyway. But there's a chance it couldn't lose in the courts.
Well, but that's the other problem here is that we are now elaborately manipulating and retooling the system to soothe the ego of an overgrown toddler who's throwing a tantrum, which I don't do for my own actual toddler, because I have dignity and sense. Not a lot of it, but enough to not give in to my four-year-old screaming at me. The thing is, it's also, if I'm remembering this correctly, wasn't there $25 billion offered for this wall border security nonsense, but it came with a package that protected
DACA.
Dreamers. Yep. DACA. So Trump was like, no.
Yeah.
And so now he's asking for $5 billion, which is, you know, one fifth the original like amount that he asked for, and throwing a temper tantrum over it. And now Democrats are just like, no, hell no. We tried this already. Yeah. And you said no. And I'm not playing this game. And so now he's screaming for $5 billion and he's not going to get it. And as a result, he has forced hundreds of thousands of people out of a job. And you know, the effect is more than that. It's about 800,000 people who are going without pay or furloughed, but they're with their families. We're talking about millions of Americans who are being affected by this shutdown. And the Trump administration response is, get over it. Drive for Uber. Like, you know, make your hobby into a, you know, a side hustle.
I think somebody said have a garage sale.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Nancy Pelosi responded to that. She said, quote, the president seems to be insensitive to that, to like this plight. He thinks maybe they could just ask their father for more money, but they can't.
Damn. Which,
drag him to hell, Nancy. Drag him to hell.
So good. Okay. So, yeah, basically, this shutdown is the fault of Donald Trump. And it's also the fault of Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. I know Paul Ryan is retired. Thank God. But basically, before the new Congress was inaugurated, the Senate passed 100-0 a continuing resolution to keep the government open, to keep it funded. Paul Ryan refused to fucking vote on it because he's an ass clown. And then January 3rd came along, the House under Nancy Pelosi voted to open the government. And then Mitch McConnell is like, no, we can't vote for this bill. And other senators are like, what the fuck, man? We voted yes 6 days ago. And so that's basically what's happening right now. It's also the fault of Mitch McConnell, who's scared. But what really bothers me is that, why is Mitch McConnell scared? So he's afraid of using an override veto, right? So like, he's afraid of the fact that if he passes this bill, that the president will veto it, as Trump has said he will. And then if he vetoes it, that the Senate will want to override the veto, and so will the House. And he's afraid that Republicans will have to take that vote to override the veto. But why is he afraid of that? Because in 2 years, when 2020 rolls around and senators have to run again, and so does Donald Trump, no Republican voter is going to give a fuck. They really are not going to give a fuck that they overrode the veto for a wall that nobody wants. And if I was really a Republican strategist,
open the government that's feeding their families. I don't fucking understand.
If I was a Republican strategist right now, I'd be like, please open the government. Not because I like what the government does, but because we have to pay people for doing the job that currently exists. And on top of that, no one is going to remember this in 2 years, because Donald Trump can still campaign on the fact that he should be reelected in order to build the wall. It's like they don't want to be the dogs that caught the car. And right now they are trying to catch the car, and they're really close to catching the car. But if they do, they're fucked. It's a really, really bad idea, in my opinion. But also, it's hurting 800,000 families.
And also, the whole thing has gone so far off the rails. We're not even playing the same game anymore. But I would just like to take a moment, and we're going to revel in Nancy Pelosi a little bit more, because, you know, epic red coat meeting.
Yeah.
She got Trump to take ownership of the government shutdown. He said on camera, I will be proud to call this my shutdown. Now, of course, he's like, oh, no, this is all Democrats' fault. And mainstream media, gotta love them, is now trying to find the nuance and oh, it takes two to tango. The Democrats are kind of at fault here,
Such bullshit.
Would never happen if this situation was reversed, which is just mad.
It actually is true. But when the government shut down under Obama, the media, as well as Republicans, obviously Republicans, were blaming Obama. The media was able to find a way to blame the president more than the party that caused the shutdown. But today, the media, for some reason, I don't understand why they do it. It really makes no sense to me. But certain media outlets are insisting on, as you said, finding the nuance here, big air quotes. And so the AP literally had a fact check where it said it takes two to tango in order to keep this shutdown going. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. Donald Trump could literally just open the government. He could do it because Democrats want to open the government.
Exactly. Democrats are begging for it. And Trump is the one, pooping in his pants over this. And I just want to take this moment to remind everyone that since the invention of Twitter, nuance is dead. So let's move on.
Yeah.
I don't understand how people can say that this is the Democrats' fault, because basically what you're saying, that if this is a Democrats' fault, their fault is not giving in to Trump. That's what's holding this up, which makes no sense. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. Also, a really funny thing is Lindsey Graham a couple days ago was like, if we cave on this wall right now, it's the end of the Trump presidency. And I'm like, is that going to make Democrats want to vote for it even more?
More?
That doesn't make sense. Why would they want to keep the Trump it literally makes no sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me why Donald Trump is continuing to harp on keeping the government shut down, except for the fact that the cruelty is the point at some point, right? There are anti-government types in his cabinet, like Mick Mulvaney, who don't give a fuck that people are going without pay because they don't like the government. And that also Donald Trump is a racist who really wants the fucking wall.
Well, so here – and okay, so this has transitioned nicely into what the shutdown is actually about, because – the cruelty has always been the point here.
Yeah.
And not just for Trump and his administration and human turd Stephen Miller and boil on the ass of this country, Mick Mulvaney, but also for the people who voted for him. And this was just so clear. The New York Times had an article about Florida a city in Florida what was went for Trump, very Republican, and the jobs were just completely, they're just gone. You know, a lot of people work for the government. The shutdown is just killing this little town. And the reporter, you know, she talked to the residents and whatever. And the last line of this article was a quote from one of the people she talked to, Crystal Minton. And I am name checking her because she deserves to be name checked. She worked for the federal prison, and she's one of the people who isn't getting paid. And she said, quote, "I voted for him, Trump, and he's the one who's doing this. I thought he was going to do good things. He's not hurting the people he needs to be hurting."
That was a gut punch when I read that.
I mean, it was one of those things where it's like we've been talking about that sentiment for, it's season three, y'all, so about three, almost, you know, 2 years now. But seeing it in black and white on the New York Times website as a direct quote from a woman from Florida named Crystal Minton.
Yeah.
He's not hurting the people he needs to be hurting. Who do you think he needs to be hurting?
Yeah. What the fuck?
You know, and yeah, and the fact of the matter is that that's going to be like that. That's the point here. This is all about hurting people. And, you know, we didn't talk about Trump's little, you know, continuation of his temper tantrum, but then on all the major news outlets. Where he got in the Oval Office, and the five major news networks gave him free airtime to talk to the American people, in which he literally just said lies for 10 minutes and looked like a sad, defeated little man and basically said, "I'm trying to hurt people."
Yeah.
And you know who this shutdown is affecting? You know, you want to talk about economic justice. Yeah, it's affecting people who work for the government. It's affecting people who missing two paychecks means they can't pay their rent or their mortgage. And you know, ultimately, when we really drill down, it's affecting women and people of color more than anyone else.
Yeah.
It is hurting exactly the people that are supposed to be hurting. Right?
According to
this
Donald Trump.
Yep. Right, exactly. This whole thing has always been about immigrants, undocumented immigrants. You know, Mexico is bringing their rapist, quote Trump, June 2015. But that's not the only group that he's been targeting this whole time. And this is where I always talk about, you know, when we get into like the Orwellian nature of it, where it's like, you know, you think when someone is going to do bad things to other people, mm-hmm. you're okay with it, but you don't realize that it will always come for you.
Yeah.
If you don't stand up for those people, you're next. And so this is exactly that. This is a, you know, working class woman in Florida who thought that the people he was going to hurt were brown people and black people and people not like her. And then when it really came down to it, what this lesson that she got right here, what she's saying is like, oh, wait, it wasn't just about brown people and black people. Mm-hmm. It was about women. It was about poor people. It was about kids. It was never just about that one group. That's just what he told you to make you complicit in your own pain. No, he's hurting the people he meant to hurt. Not just with this wall, but with this whole process. This is always who he was trying to punish.
Yeah. He's literally holding the government hostage, and he's holding these 800,000 people and their families, and then the extended impact of this shutdown hostage, and asking the Democrats to pay the fucking ransom. And there are people out there quoted in the story who think he's the good guy. And it's really frustrating, right. And it's really scary, but that's just the case. The guy is a kidnapper. He is a kidnapper, and he's been kidnapping government institutions,
literally,
institutional norms, and everything for 2 years now.
He also kidnapped children.
Yeah, he also kidnapped children. Literally kidnapped children.
Like actual children.
So,
you know what this reminds me of? Season one of The Good Place, and I'm going to spoil the hell out of it. So if you haven't seen it,
Stop right now.
But season one of The Good Place, the idea is that Eleanor is in The Good Place. She's not supposed to be there. Everyone else is supposed to be there. And so Michael, who's the architect, you know, who's like talking to her, and she's trying to hide it from him that she's actually not supposed to be there. And he does all this like weird stuff. And if you've never seen the show before, you know, he like kicks a puppy.
Yeah.
And he like lights things on fire, but it's because it's The Good Place, you know, it kind of gets written off as like, oh my gosh, I didn't mean to do whatever. And at the end of the season, it's revealed that it's actually the bad place. Yep. It's actual literal hell. And you look back and you're like, the guy kicked a puppy. Yeah. Like, how could I have not known that this was the bad place the whole time?
Exactly.
And that's it. That's what's going on.
Oh my God,
here,
it is.
Is, yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. So basically, yeah, it's a great analogy. And obviously, like, if you go later in the good place, Michael ends up being a good guy. But that's where the analogy stops.
Right.
But basically, yeah, it's the fucking bad place in the sense that, like, people who voted for him refuse to see that it's the bad place. They refuse to see that, like, what he is doing is not only hurting them, but hurting people that they care about, and also hurting people that they don't care about, and because they're excusing racism. But it's, they refuse to see that, and it's continuing this idea that Donald Trump has a base that's impenetrable, right? But I think eventually, as the longer this shutdown goes, he's going to realize that it's not impenetrable. And some people who are government workers are finally going to realize, I can no longer put my confidence in this man. And I hope that is the case. And maybe it's not the case that, like, you know, and white people will continue to choose racism again and again in 2020. But
They will.
I hope at least Democrats are able to reach out to a few people during the shutdown and during 2019 to prove to them that, like, Donald Trump does not have their best interests at heart. And it all comes down to this, like, racist speech he gave a couple days ago, this national address, right, that the media had no problem airing, even though when Obama was president, he wanted to give a speech and wanted airtime. They said the speech was too political, so they refused to air it. But they aired this racist
shit. That's a really good example, actually. That's a really good example of institutional racism, though.
It is, because...
Right, and the assumption of like, a white person being... like it implicitly good intentioned.
Yeah. And also assuming that because it's tradition that you have to give him the platform, you give him the platform, because that's what the media, cable news outlets specifically, were relying on. And I'm like, if it was such big tradition, why didn't you give it to Obama, right? For even more policy-based speech, because his speech, Donald Trump's speech, was just bullshit. He blamed Democrats for holding the national government hostage, even though it's him. He also claimed that Democrats want the southern border to be steel, not concrete. And I'm like, what the fuck? What are you talking about? And then he also claimed that the border wall would pay for itself.
He also said that the border wall would keep out drugs, which is
not
patently ridiculous.
Not true. Drugs come in through legal ports of entry.
Does he not have a Netflix account? Like, someone needs to watch Narcos, okay? Yeah. It's literally, like, that's not how any of this works. I don't know. So
that's not how any of this works. Also, he also continued his racist tirade against Mexicans by listing off a bunch of violent crimes committed by immigrants as part of, like, literally a campaign against Mexicans. Not just Mexicans who are from Mexico, but also Mexican-Americans, Hispanics, Latinos, like, he insisted on doubling down on the racism because, as you say, the cruelty is the fucking point. At this point, it's not about the wall anymore. It literally is about what the wall represents.
Exactly.
And the wall represents, like, this – a way to literally keep out people who are other. And Donald Trump Jr. said it himself in the most creepy and cruel words possible. He said it's to keep you animals out. Donald Trump Jr. said that.
Yep.
Just a couple days ago. So the cruelty is the point.
Yeah, they're really just giving away the game at this point. It's like they've lost all measurable fucks, which I commend them for that. It's freeing, but it also means that you end up saying the quiet part out loud. So, you know, and I also said this on Twitter, but I would just also like to point out that no matter what Donald Trump says, romaine lettuce killed more people this year than undocumented immigrants. So, and since the government is now shut down and the FDA is no longer inspecting food factories, that's going to be a bigger, much bigger problem than immigration. Okay, Varsha, so quickly, we are going to do a Hellion of the week. So who is this week's Hellion?
So this week's Hellion is Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because she's done something that I am super, super excited about. She's found a way to get the media actually talking about policy, and it's tickling me pink. It's fucking awesome. Also, she represents the fact that the Democratic Party has changed so much in the past few years, in the sense that we finally are really listening to progressive policy ideas from people who are actually representative of the Democratic Party. But basically, in a 60 Minutes interview, As well as later, she proposed a 70% marginal tax rate. And quick pause, if people don't know what marginal tax rates are, let me just quickly explain. She's not arguing for 70% of everyone's income to be taxed or 70% of a rich person's complete income to be taxed. She's arguing for a 70% tax on somebody's 10 millionth dollar. So every dollar they earn after 10 million will be taxed 70%. They still get the first $10 million, and that will be taxed at a lower rate, and then a lower rate, and a lower rate. That's how marginal tax rates work. And so she proposed
Wait, can I throw in one thing, though?
Yeah.
Also, under Eisenhower, the marginal tax rate for the top tiers was like above 90%. So this is not new. And Eisenhower is like when you think of like a Republican's wet dream, it just looks like Eisenhower.
Yeah. And the reason it dropped is because of Reagan. And so any time before Reagan, the top marginal tax rate has been really, really high. And so the current rate is 37%, and she proposes 70%. And everybody, every Republican loses their goddamn mind, but also engages in bad faith by pretending they don't know what a marginal tax rate is. But she keeps the story on the tax rate. She keeps the story on the fact that it's a marginal tax rate. And she points out the media's inability to cover it fairly. And then the media corrects itself. And so another reason she's the hellion is the right-wing media is losing its goddamn mind. They cannot find a way to stop being obsessed with her. It's literally like she's Regina George from Mean Girls. And she's like, why are you so obsessed with me?
Yeah. And to be fair, the right-wing media is getting into like the creepy, sexualized, like stalker kind of obsession at this point.
The Daily Caller, which is a white supremacist blog, literally posted a fake story about a fake nude selfie. And it's literally they're posting fake revenge porn to attack Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And she tweeted out that there are reporters going to her ex-boyfriend's houses and their relatives and asking for stories. She's literally being harassed for being good at her job. And so there are, I'm just going to put the caveat in here now for anyone listening, there are definitely reasonable things to disagree with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on in terms of her tactics and her policies. Go ahead. But the fact that she is dealing with the sexist attacks from the right as well as from the left is amazing and hellion worthy. And also a 70% top marginal tax rate is a great idea, and a way to expand on that should be coming from other Democrats, which is to close a shit ton of loopholes that are currently making it possible for rich people to just hide their money. And so that's why she's the hellion.
Yeah. Do you remember when like the biggest like when Mitt Romney was running and everyone was talking about double taxing dividends and like he was so rich? Like, can we go back to that kind of fucking dialogue? Because that was at least interesting. All this shit about nude selfies. I'm just like, what?
And her dancing to a Breakfast Club like meme. All this bullshit.
You know what that video told me? You know what that video showed me? I was very uncool in college. That's all that showed me.
Yeah. It also proved to me that I can't dance. I've been under the impression that I can dance for a long time.
This video finally shook me. But you know who else gets attacked? Attacked from all sides, right, left, center?
Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi.
And she was badass this week.
So you know what? Let them hate.
Because they're definitely, and I don't care if it hasn't been reported on because I am sure of it, there are definitely like people in the Democratic caucus right now because it's day 20 of the shutdown thinking, how do we compromise on this? And Nancy Pelosi is out here being like, not a fucking penny, bitches. Fucking penny. So that's why AOC is the hellion for me, as well as like people like Nancy Pelosi and other amazing congresswomen like Ayanna Pressley and Ilhan Omar, because they refuse to compromise on their values. And so AOC gets the medal for me this week because specifically about this tax rate thing.
Rashida Tlaib calling Donald Trump a motherfucker was a cleansing balm on my cold feminist soul.
Oh man, we missed that. Okay, yeah. So quickly, Rashida Tlaib called Donald Trump a motherfucker because she literally, her son was saying, her son was like, oh my God, you won. And Rashida Tlaib was like, yeah, let's impeach the motherfucker. And then the media went on a shit show, like temper tantrum, where they were like, should she apologize? Couldn't get over the fact that a person of color said a bad word. A word that is true, by the way. There is no way every reporter in this country hasn't called Donald Trump a motherfucker at least once in the past 2 years. And maybe they don't do it in public, but they did it. And it is 100% factual. She said nothing wrong. And that's what I like about AOC, as well as all these other congresswomen, is that they refuse to compromise on their values. And so compromise is good, but never on your fucking principles.
Exactly, exactly. Also, Mike is literally a motherfucker. Okay, so on that disgusting Mike mother literally fucking Pence, action item. So, Varsha, what is something that Hellions can do after they listen to the show?
So the first thing you should do is you should call your senator and tell them to vote to open the government. Especially if you have a Republican senator, tell them your story about how the government shutdown is affecting you or a person you know. If you know a person who's working for the federal government, because you probably do, and tell them under no circumstances should they vote for a wall, and also under no circumstances should they keep the government shut down. Tell them to open the fucking government. Especially if you're
peeling off Republicans. Oh, God, yeah. We're peeling off Republicans. Yeah, if you live in Kentucky, like, Mitch McConnell needs to hear from your angry ass.
Yeah. And also, we probably will need to override a presidential veto eventually, because Mitch McConnell probably will cave before Donald Trump does. At least that's what I think. I could be wrong. But so in that case, also call your House members, especially if your House member is Republican, and tell them to vote to open the fucking government. Because it needs to happen. It's unacceptable at this point. It's been 20 days and we're keeping it closed for a fictional wall that's not going to do anything, that's actually going to cost, like, it's going to be a waste of money. Like, fuck Republicans and the deficit hawk talk, because they're literally wasting money.
Yeah. Also, I haven't made this joke in a while, and I know no one likes it, but I do, but we are still living in the darkest timeline of Lost. No one likes that joke except me, so I'm going to keep making it. But anyway, so, Varsha, that was quite a show. I know that you're having a good time in DC, but that is it for us. So thank you, Hellions, so much for listening, for staying with us. We're going to be back here next week. So in the meantime, have a great week, raise some hell, and remember to practice some compassion. Hellbent Podcast is a production of Hellbent Media. It is produced by me, Devin Handy.
And Varsha Venkata Subramanian.
And we, of course, take input from co-creator Sarah Lerner.
You can follow us on social media at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
And you can join our Facebook group, Dickwads Be Gone, at facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Varsha_Venkat.
And you can follow me at Devin Handy. Also, remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just the rules of feminism. Tune in every Monday and Thursday for an intersectional feminist look and the centering of women's voices and people of color. We look at current events, public policy, and upcoming elections to give you the most incisive look into stories that don't get covered elsewhere.